Hey folks, and welcome to this week's podcast. As we hear Drivin' in the background, the A-side of the first Pearl Harbor and the Explosions single. We're here today to talk to Pearl Harbor, aka Pearl E. Gates, about the re-release of the Pearl Harbor and the Explosions album. They broke up, man, not too soon after the record came out, but we'll hear the whole story in this interview. She's a super interesting lady, not afraid to talk about the ups and downs, the good and the bad of her experience being in this band, in the music industry, recording this record. I think just there's enough water under the bridge and her perspective is kind of solidified. Just kind of refreshing to hear somebody tell it like it was. If you want information about what she's up to right now, Pearl Harbor Music is her Instagram feed, and there's lots of amazing pictures of her. She's a striking woman and has adopted a lot of different looks over the years. Great pictures on there. I highly recommend that. LiberationHall.com is the website for the record label, and PearlHarborMusic.com is her website. But that Instagram is really, I think, the place to start. Super great visuals on that. So this is a super interesting story. It's all right here in the podcast. I hope you enjoy it, and stay tuned. Talk to you soon. All right, there is Pearl Harbor and the Explosions with Drivin'. What a fantastic record that is. That is on this new re-release, what is coming out on Liberation Hall. It's got all these bonus tracks and stuff we've been talking about, and Pearl Harbor joins us on the phone. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the first question. I see that this is coming out on Sky Blue Vinyl. Do you still have a turntable?
I sure do. I use it every day.
Oh, that's fantastic. The band started in San Francisco, and I was doing my research, and I found this 45 by Leah and the Snakes, and my mind was a little bit blown. This is like a link in the chain just right before Pearl Harbor and the Explosions. It's very cabaret. It kind of reminded me almost of like the Rocky Picture Horror Show or something. I know that you worked with the Tubes. Was there a lot of that sort of theatrical music happening in San Francisco?
Yeah, I first saw the Tubes in 1975, and then in 1976 they had a talent contest, and I won that by tap dancing and tap dancing boxer, so I had on a boxing outfit and all that kind of stuff. And Leela's real name was Jane Doorknocker, and she was also in the Tubes. So when I won the Tubes talent contest and I got to dance with the Tubes and do background vocals and percussion, and they invited me to do all kinds of things, it was really fun. Then Jane asked me to be in Leela and the Snakes. So I started with Leela and the Snakes in 1977, and then I was with them in 1977 to 78, and it was a cabaret show. It was really, really great. I don't know if you can see any of it on YouTube. I never look at YouTube. I'm not very techno-oriented, so I don't really look up my stuff, but I wish people could see it because it was really, really funny show, and it was very popular, and we only played in San Francisco. And then several of the band members, you know, would come and go, like the musicians. I was the background singer, and also I did all the dancing and all the comedy stuff, so singing and dancing and, you know, being a total nut, and so the bass players and drummers and guitar players, they used to swap and change all the time. So the Stench brothers, who were in Pearl Harbor and the Explosions, they joined Leela and the Snakes in 1978. And we were very popular. We got to perform, be the opening act for all of the British bands that were coming to town, you know, in 77 and 78, like, you know, Ian Dury and the Blockheads, Elvis Costello, Mink DeVille, which were not British, but they were really great. And anyways, we got to be the support act. And after a while, me and John and Hillary all decided that we wanted to start our own rock band and write our own music and be a bit more, I don't know what the word is, serious about our music instead of being in a comedy cabaret show. So that's how Pearl Harbor and the Explosions started.
So when you recorded this, the 45, which I think ended up selling about 10,000 copies, did you have expectations that you would reach a wider audience than the local audience?
No, we had no idea. We were just, you know, the local band that we were popular, and we didn't think that we would ever get noticed anywhere out of San Francisco. No, we didn't know.
So how long to record it? And I should say that the single versions of Drive-In and Release It are bonus tracks on the new re-release CD. How long to record this? Was it done in one day or a couple days?
Oh, definitely one day, more like just a few hours, because we got free recording time at a local recording studio. So we just had to go in there and quickly record it and get out of there so that we, you know, we didn't take advantage of the free offer.
So tell me about writing the songs on that first 45, because I think they're both credited to all four folks in the band. How did those songs get written?
John and Hillary and Peter all lived together in this old Victorian house in San Francisco. And so we used to rehearse in the basement. So I would arrive and the band would already be in the basement, jamming, as I used to call it. And I would walk in and say, oh, I like that, or oh, I don't like that. And I have to admit that it was all of our first experience at, you know, being in a band together and songwriting and stuff like that. So I didn't really realize that the Explosions were mostly interested in sort of jazz fusion. And I'm a crazy rock and roll girl, so I didn't know it wasn't going to work out songwriting or anything like that in the end. But, you know, we all did our best to make things work. So, you know, for Drive-In, Hillary had that bass line and we all said, oh, that's really cool. You know, and then after the band would fool around with the music for a while, we'd go upstairs and then decide what the song sounded like. Like I said something like, it sounds like it's a motion song to me. And so, you know, how about Drive-In? And then we would go boom, 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 Drive-In. And then it's just sort of, you know, it sounds so idiotic, but that's really how what we used to do was that they would come up with different riffs or whatever, you know, and then we would like something and then go upstairs and work on it without the drums. We'd work on it with just guitars and vocals. And that's how we pretty much wrote everything. Yeah. Huh. So I contributed to the lyrics on all the songs, and then everybody else contributed to lyrics and the music. But so that's why we all four were credited for each song.
Yeah, that's I find that fascinating. That's a great process for working together. And it takes special kind of people, I think, to be able to collaborate that way. Can I ask how old you guys were at that point?
We were all born around 1955, so we were all around 20. 75, we would have been 20, so we were in our early 20s.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So the record, the 45, sells 10,000 copies, which is a tremendous amount, and you get signed by Warner Brothers Records, and they quickly take you into the studio. I find this very fascinating, because the same producer, David Kane, produces the album, who produced the record, and you re-recorded those songs, and the sonic difference in those two recordings, you know, just the drums at the beginning of You Got It, if you compare the two versions, it's just 10 times bigger. So how long then to record the first album? I assume you didn't do it all in one day at a free studio.
No, like you said, we did get money from Warner Brothers to record that. And David Kahn is his name. And he did produce both the single and the album. I personally prefer the single because it just sounds more raw and more live. But that could be because that's what I remember it being like. When we were in the recording studio making the album, you know, everybody took a long time to make everything perfect. And I found that really tedious and boring. And I got sort of, I got disgruntled a lot in the recording studio because everything was always, double tracked or, you know, overdubs, all that stuff. I don't really like all that stuff. I prefer the wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, you know, style. So I didn't enjoy making that album, I'll tell you the truth, Michael.
That's interesting. Do you know how long you were trapped in there making it?
About 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I know that David, I didn't know his name was pronounced Khan, that David Khan can be a sort of a tough customer. In fact, I was talking to somebody who said that he made them cry in the studio. Was he tough? Is he a tough taskmaster?
Yeah, I didn't like him at all, and I haven't seen him in a million years, so if he's changed, sorry, David, maybe you're a nice guy now. But yeah, he was really tough, and he was really mean, and I didn't appreciate it. You know, I'll never forget, I was singing doing lead vocals on a song, and then I can't, you know, came into the listening room, and then he was saying something like, oh, you were really sharp on this chorus. And then he said, you know, would say stuff like, have you ever considered taking singing lessons? And you don't say that to somebody when they're recording an album. It was just so rude. And I just thought he was a big creep. And like I said, he was a perfectionist. And I just thought, you know, I couldn't stand him. So that's mainly why it was so awful recording with him, because I didn't like him. And the boys, the Three Explosions, they liked him. So, you know, it was really kind of awful. It was me, the girl, against the four guys, and that doesn't make for a very healthy situation.
Yeah. Well, I know that, you know, if we listen to your work after the Explosions, it's very different than this. But, you know, even putting all that aside, if you listen like to this new re-release of this album now, do you appreciate the work that went into it and how shining, and it still sounds great now? And not every, you know, record released in 1980 still sounds good, right? A lot of them sound so dated. This, to me, still sounds really fresh and sounds fun.
Well, that's a good point, because I do appreciate that it was recorded really well. And if I liked the songs more, I probably would appreciate it more. But I'll have to be honest and say, you know, I've made 5 albums, and Pearl Harbor and the Explosions was the most successful I ever was. And so that album sold more than any of my other records. And I do appreciate that people do still like it and consider it to be, you know, a great pop album. I'm really thankful, actually. And before, it used to mean, when I was younger, it meant a lot to me that I didn't like the record, but now it doesn't matter at all. You know, I'm an old fart, and I'm like, oh, great, you like that record? Great, thanks. You know?
Yeah, sure. Take it where you can get it, absolutely. So you guys get signed to Warner Brothers, which is such a huge label. I assume they're just spending a fortune on you and taking ads and giving you tour support and putting you in limousines that you end up paying for, et cetera, et cetera. So
that's
tell me.
Exactly right. And to actually, Michael, not that many people know this, but because of the success of that independent single, we got approached by many, Clive Davis, Epic, CBS, Warner Brothers, even Stiff Records in England. We got Columbia. We got all sorts of offers, and we decided to go with Warner Brothers because we liked, you know, the people there that spoke with us. You know, they seemed to be nicer, more relatable people. So that is why we signed to Warner Brothers. And yes, they did spend a fortune on us, which when you're young, you don't realize that, you know, you have to pay it back. But yeah, that was a real thorn in our side. You know, we were like, they sent us on this huge tour. And like you said, you know, limousines and everything was just really fantastic. And then when the band broke up, the record company was so upset because they said, we just spent a fortune on you guys, and look what you're doing. Why are you doing this? And of course it was all me. So then they were mad at me, and so then I moved to London, and then they were really mad at me.
Yeah, I'll bet. So when you went when that record came out, I know that you guys were opening band for some huge, huge, huge bands. Are there any great stories about some of those experiences?
My favorite stories with Pearl Harbor and Explosions was touring with the Talking Heads, because I love that band, and they're all the greatest people. They were so much fun. And Tina is the only girl in the Talking Heads, and I was the only girl in Pearl Harbor and Explosions. So Tina and I shared a dressing room every night, And we just had a ball. We were stoners. We were always, you know, smoking pot and having, just really having a great time before and after the show. And I was the one who got Tina to start wearing mini skirts because she always wore, looked dressed like a boy. She always had, you know, blue jeans and T-shirts and short hair. And I said, you know, she enjoyed watching me get all dressed up and put on makeup and everything. And she said, that looks like so much fun. And I said, you ought to do it too. And so then she did. And so that's kind of like one of my claims to fame is getting Tina to be more sexy, I guess. Not that she wasn't anyways, because she's beautiful inside and out. She's so talented and wonderful.
But you were her stylist, sort of.
Yeah, in those days. Yes.
So you just said it, that after a year or so, the Stench Brothers, which is such a wonderful 1978 last name to adopt, the Stench Brothers, and decide that they want to go in that sort of jazz direction, and the band disintegrates, and you go to England and start your sort of your solo career. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that this record has been re-released already. I mean, it's amazing that, like I sort of alluded to earlier, that there's still demand for this record and still...
I know. I agree. I'm really shocked myself. Yeah, because a couple of years ago, and it sold out, and then they didn't print anymore. And so that's why Liberation Hall took it back over and said, let's do vinyl and CD. So I'm curious to see if I can do well and sell more records and CDs again. I'm not sure, but I hope so. And I'm very thankful that people are interested. Yes. Michael, it might have to do with the fact that 80s music is popular. And, you know, it's kind of like if I think back to the 70s when I was in my 20s, I was collecting records from the 50s and 60s. You know what I mean? So it could possibly be something to do with that.
Yes, the cycle sort of just comes around and around again. You mentioned Liberation Hall is re-releasing it. It's coming out on Sky, Blue Vinyl, and on CD, and on download. There will be 7 bonus tracks on the CD, and I think 1 on the LP is all they can fit on there. One of the bonus tracks is a cover of Nick Lowe's Let's Eat, a live cover of that. How did you guys get that into your repertoire?
We were big Nick Lowe fans, and we supported him a number of shows, and that was one of our favorite songs. And it's just a silly, fun song. And so, you know, I said, can we, you know, try to do this song and just play it live? And everyone said, yeah, because everyone agreed that we all liked Nick Lowe. That was one thing we could agree on. So then, you know, we rehearsed it, and then we used to play it live, and it always got a great reaction. So we always included it in our live set, and it was a fun song to do live. That's for sure. I love Nick Lowe.
Yeah, we love Nick Lowe here, and yes, it's a great bonus track, and it's a lot of fun to listen to. There's liner notes by Joel Selvin. He's another guy who's been a guest on this program. Does history see this band the same way you see it?
Well, you know, my opinions and about the music and the band and about the recording and everything I just kept that quiet up until recently because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I love the Explosions as people. I just don't like their taste in music. So I never really talked much about it until now. And so, yeah, everybody does write, especially Joel, because Joel was a main part of our success because he wrote about us all the time. We were always in the newspaper because of him. And so, you know, when he writes about how much, you know, he enjoyed our music or whatever and how fun the shows were or something like that, it was all true. And we did incredibly well playing live, and we always had a good time. And we always, like I said, that was the most successful I ever was. We always packed the house, whereas I don't pack the house now. And everybody always danced and enjoyed themselves. I'm a ham, so you put me on stage and I'll be happy, but I felt silly singing songs that I didn't like. Mm. So as soon as I quit the band, I never, ever sang another song that I didn't like. So, you know, that's kind of how I feel about the whole era and, you know, that time in my life.
Mm. Interesting. Was naming the band Pearl Harbor and the Explosions, was that your guys' idea?
Yeah, because my name being Pearl Gates, and so we wanted to have a funny band name, but at the same time, you know, we wanted it to pack a little bit of a punch because punk was just starting out and it was very popular. Now, we were not a punk band. We were more, you know, like new wave, power pop. But Pearl Harbor and the Explosions just to us sounded like it had a good sense of humor, but it sounded timely regarding, you know, being sort of aggressive like punk music, also with a sense of humor. But the funny thing about that was that the radio stations wouldn't play us because they didn't think it was funny at all, Pearl Harbor and the Explosions, because I guess, you know, as you all know, Pearl Harbor was not one of the best things in American history to happen. So the radio stations wouldn't play us, regardless of us being on Warner Brothers or not. So that's a big reason why we never had any, you know, hits or success, was because no one would play our records on the radio.
Besides doing interviews like this, what do you do all day? What's your life like now?
Next month I'll be turning 70, and so I am retired, and I live in the desert with my dog, and I just have a really quiet life. I'm recovering from lung cancer, unfortunately, but fortunately I survived, because a lot of people don't. So I'm still in recovery mode. It's just been exactly 1 year since I finished chemo, and it really destroyed me and my body physically. Physically, I look the same. I didn't lose my hair. I, you know, still look the same, and you can't tell how much I'm hurting, but I'm sick all the time. I can't do much. I can't sing anymore. I might be able to sing, you know, in another year. I practice singing every day, but it's not happening because I can't breathe very well. Mm. So we'll see what happens, Michael, but, you know, I'm lucky to be alive, but life is tough for me right now, I have to say, but, you know, it's okay because I live in the desert and I have a nice little life out here. I have nice friends and stuff like that, you know.
That's quite a story. I'm so happy to hear that you pulled through. I want to remind folks that Pearl Harbor is our guest. You can go to liberationhall.com or go to pearlharbormusic.com to get information about what you're up to, or buy some of these new sky blue vinyl LPs that you'll be playing on your turntable. I want to hear You Got It, because to me this is a number one hit record. There's no question in my mind. This is just from the opening drums. Do you remember sitting there in the recording studio? Because I'm sure you guys knew you were a good live band, but was there a moment in the recording studio where you thought, wow, this sounds amazing?
For me, no. I knew that Drivin' was a great song, and I knew that people liked Drivin' the best. And so, you know, with each song that got recorded, like I said, the musicians were really good. So each song, no, Michael,
That's okay.
I didn't think anybody was really going to like it, because I didn't like it. But I hoped that people would like it, but I didn't think they would.
And here we are, whatever it is, 45 years later.
I know. I just feel so lucky to even be talking to you about this record, because it is sort of mind-boggling after all these years that people are interested, and I'm seriously thankful.
Yeah, that's great to hear that. Well, let's hear that record. Pearl Harbor, thank you so much for joining us, and best of luck with your recovery and with this reissue.
Oh, thank you so much, Michael. Yeah, and if any of your listeners are interested, they can look at my Instagram, which is Pearl Harbor Music, and that pretty much shows you all the stuff that I've been doing.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye for now. Thank you, Michael. Take care.